It's the motherfucking Millennial Media Podcast.
Hold up, son. Word. Yeah. To all the killers and the $100 billers.
Yo, watch out, homie.
For real, niggas who ain't got no feelings. Feelings. Check it out.
Welcome back to the Millennial Miha Podcast. I'm Millennial Miha, and I'm so excited to share this episode with you today. This is the audio version of the video of the first time I was ever on TV. And Brian Barry invited me to be on his show. It's filmed at the Pasadena Media Studio. And that is a place that I have recently started to take classes at to learn video or TV production and professional recording and sound and audio engineering and all these things that I want in order to, progress my career in this realm of kind of like having a platform, whether that's doing the podcast, interviewing people, just having like really meaningful conversations and also just, sharing my own art with the world and the way I see things and the things that I learn along the way, because that I feel is the most impactful part about my platform, is just like people seeing that just anyone can do this. Like me, just somebody who I think a lot of people counted out for a while, you can come back and you can start something that's your own and you can rebrand yourself in a way that is totally authentic to you, and there's value in that. And so this episode is exciting for me to share because not only is it the first time I was on TV officially, even though it was public access, shout out Oreo Channel. I didn't even watch it, but we're good because I already knew that I could just watch it on YouTube, and I am a millennial Miha, so you know that's what I was gonna do anyways. But I just I'm excited because not only is this my first time on TV, it's my first time showing up completely and totally as myself in a moment. And that was down to everything, like the way I dressed and the way my hair was not perfectly lined, which like still to this day bothers me because it's like on the side where the camera is. But like I'm imperfectly me, and that making it literally the perfect moment, because there's, although I don't necessarily like the way I look, which is like, it's so irrelevant in comparison to what I said. And I think that was the biggest lesson for me, is like, this is the first time I wasn't focused on how my voice sounded or like how my hair looked, or none of those things mattered to me, because the content in the video is something that I'm totally fine with living forever, if that makes any sense. Like, I plan to have a long, beautiful career, and I want to be able to look back on my very first TV appearance as like, that was me today, and 20 years later, that I still want to look back and know who that girl is and like still have her in me and be proud to be her. And so that's the reason why I wanted to share this as its episode alone, because I know that 30 minutes of video is like hard to watch, but you know, 30 minute podcast, not so hard to listen to. So I really appreciate everyone listening, and all of you who have been supporting me up to this point. You know, Miha's Making Moves is not just my thing that says on my t-shirts that I'm selling, but it's like who we are, and that's who I'm making this for. Like the girls who want something bigger than what they have now, and their dreams are big and their hearts are big, and they're just like me. So I want to pull back the curtain, like I say in the interview, and show you all that, you know, everything I have, you can have this and more if you just invest in yourself a little bit and believe in yourself, man. That's really, really how it all starts. So you can build an empire once you get that part down. So you're witnessing me building the empire brick by brick, and with so much gratitude and so much humility. And so, like I said, I want to pull back the curtain. And this is my very first TV interview by Brian Barry, who asks some very, very beautiful questions. Like, you know, that is this moment that you're about to listen to is the moment that I decided that I wanted to interview people for the rest of my life. And just have beautiful conversations for a living. And so the way I opened up to Brian was 100% like brought to you by how beautiful those questions were and how genuine he really was in his admiration for me and just his welcoming spirit. And so I want to be able to do that and help other people open up and have these beautiful conversations. So here it is, my Power of One interview.
Welcome to the Power Room. My name is Brian Beery, and I'm your host. This show demonstrates how one person can make a difference. And in our community, there are hundreds of people who are doing that every day. I'm really excited today to welcome to the show Angela Geary, who's a local poet, educator, advocate, and brilliant person. So thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for calling me brilliant.
I've read your work, so I know what it's about. So what I wanted to start off with is, can you tell a little bit about your roots here in Pasadena, your growing up, your childhood, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, growing up, I moved around a lot. I come from a single parent home. My mom is a single mother, and we had to move around a lot. But I was born in Pasadena at Huntington, and then I spent the early formative years in Sierra Madre, which is not far from Pasadena. And then I came to Pasadena to live during my high school years. And so growing up here was interesting because I know that Pasadena is like one of those cities where there's equally as much poverty as there is, you know, wealth. And it's in such a close proximity that it's interesting.
Yeah, Pasadena is a unique place. A lot of people think it's a bedroom community. And so as a bedroom community or a suburb of Los Angeles, then everything is fine there. It's, you know, middle class and above.
Everything is not fine.
Yeah.
That's one thing.
So, but you and I know that there's a dichotomy here. There's a lot of contrast where we do have some of the hardest working marginalized folks in Los Angeles, but then we have extreme wealth as
well. Absolutely.
And one of the reasons why I bring it up is because that's fertile territory for writing and for creating.
Absolutely.
Which is something else I wanted to learn about you is what was that process? I mean, you know, we hear about other artists and they say, I knew right from the very beginning that that's what I wanted to be. What was your experience? Was it something that kind of came along over time, or were you writing poems as a three-year-old?
No, not writing poems as a three-year-old. I was probably putting on shows as a three-year-old. I always knew that I wanted to be on stage. I always had like this larger-than-life personality. I would often get called, you know, annoying or a ham by my mom. She would say that I was just so extra because I just had that quality of just loud and boisterous, and I just wanted attention, a little bit dramatic, but I guess that kind of is prime to put you as an artist, you know, like we're a lot. And the place that I can be my most authentic self is on the page. And so I found writing to be very therapeutic for me, and to say the things that I couldn't say out loud, because after you say some things out loud so many times and it's not received well, then you start saying, well, all right, this is not working for me, I'm going to have to put this somewhere else. And I put it on the page.
Yeah. So along the way, were there any people who kind of encouraged you or nurtured you?
Oh, yeah. My mom definitely encouraged me to be an artist. I was always interested in painting and drawing. My mom said that from a very young age I was drawing. And she used to take me to, as a single mom, you know, there's not a lot of money, but she still found money to take me to Michael's, and we would buy these little figurines and we would paint them together on the weekends, and that was just like the funnest thing to me. And I was always into school supplies because the bright colors of Lisa Frank, I don't know if you know her, she's an icon, but she makes these really brightly glittery, just fun artwork on her school supplies. It was like a combination of something that I loved aesthetically, but also they were useful because I could make and create things with them, and I was always creating things.
So like the week before school every year, you
would decorate my notebook.
Yeah, with Lisa Frank.
With Lisa Frank, gear. Pictures of my friends. With, you know, I would have a friend graffiti my name and put, I was creative directing my whole school supply situation. It was very serious.
Yeah, I would have loved to. I wish you had brought one. I'd love to see one. I'm sure you saved them, right?
I didn't. I didn't. I'm kind of a pack rat, so I'm trying to get rid of stuff.
Yeah, but. Downsizing. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit more specifically about poetry. What is the power of poetry in from your perspective? And I really liked what you said about, you know, I kept telling people or I kept speaking, but then no one would listen. So how does that transform into the written word? How is that? Where is that power? Where does it resonate?
Well, I think the power of poetry is in honesty. I always say, I tell my students when I do writing workshops that a poem is the shortest distance between two people, because you break down all of the BS of the favorite color and the petty things that annoy you, and you get to the core of someone really quickly by reading something that they wrote in a poem. And I think that is because a poem is the rare place in life where you get to edit. And you get to, because the power in a poem is that it's so much emotion packed into the least words possible. And so every word is, I wouldn't say painstakingly, but oftentimes it is put there, because it needs to, the whole structure has one message, and that is to convey how I'm feeling. And until you find the right word, it's so, how many times have you heard a song and you're like, oh, I don't have to say it now?
Yeah, or what I think a lot is, that's what I was gonna say. Because it resonates so much with me. It's like, I'm so glad they did that, but I've been thinking that for like 5 years.
And the way they put it together, that's the art. That's right. Where the art is.
Right.
And everyone has those emotions, but I think it takes a lot of bravery for someone to write it down and actually own up to it. Like, these are my thoughts, because sometimes I'll read a poem that I'm like, I can't believe they said that. Oh my gosh, they must feel so much lighter because they told the truth. And I think that's really difficult for people sometimes. I know it is for me.
Yeah, so some people have this notion of poetry as being elitist or being sort of, well, a couple of parts. One is that it's all about romance, or it's all about,
wrong.
Lost loves. But after reading your work or hearing your work, it's so much different from that, and so much more detailed and more. There's social justice in it, there's women's rights, there's environmental rights. So why is it that our society has kind of this notion that poetry is just a love letter to someone you lost years ago?
Well, because I think for so long the poets that were published were if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You feel me? Like, people are going to keep doing the same thing that works. And if those old tired love poems is what sells, then people are going to keep writing them, because that's what sells. But I'm not interested in what sells. I'm interested in telling the truth. And I'm interested in being myself, and I'm interested in inspiring other people to do the same. And so I think that they need to give opportunities to different kinds of poets, because we're not all, romance. And that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it sort of makes me think that poetry has the power to change someone's life, and possibly even save someone's life.
Absolutely.
What would you say to that?
I would say you're right. I would say it absolutely has saved my life. My mom pointed out to me this morning that she does not know where I would be if I hadn't found poetry, because my depression and I was diagnosed bipolar, and my lows are extremely low. And if I didn't have that place to put that pain, then it would eat me up inside, and it would have caused me to who knows what.
Yeah. So if poetry is so powerful, let's talk a little bit about accessibility, or about how we can, or how it might be more commonplace. So do you think most anybody could be a poet?
Absolutely. I believe everyone is a poet.
So how do we, or how do non-poets like me, how do we tap into that?
You have to be brave. You have to be willing to say the things that you don't want to say. You have to dig deep inside and figure out what it is that you want to say, because some people don't even ask themselves that question. They are not even concerned with, what do I want to say? That was a really important question that you asked me before we began, was, what do you want people to know about you? And I had to think about that, and that really helped frame my mind for who I was going to present myself as in this interview, because I think so many times I have decided to present myself as the most palpable version of myself and watered myself down so that other people would feel more comfortable, and I'm tired of doing that. And so I really appreciate the opportunity to come here and talk to you, because I feel like your intentions are very good, because you see that there's something inside of me that should be shared, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about that.
Yeah, so one of the themes that you keep coming back to is honesty. And I think you were just brutally honest right there, which is great. A lot of people are uncomfortable with honesty. They're uncomfortable with the truth. Are there ways in which we can, because I think not only therapeutically, but I think also sociologically, I think if more people were engaged in the arts, I think it would be beneficial for all of us. Mm-hmm. So how do you think we get people to feel more comfortable with telling their truth?
We need to stop scrutinizing mistakes, because people are too scared to tell the truth, because they think that they... It all stems from this kind of institutionalized idea that is given to us in school, that we need to be perfect. Mm-hmm. And perfection often means, it's perceived to mean that you have no problems. Mm-hmm. And that you are happy with everything in your life, everything is going A-OK, and you know, everything is just Gucci, but it's not. And so it's the people who say that out loud, like, I'm not good right now. That gives people the power to say, whoa, she could say that, then I'm not okay either. And maybe I should see a therapist, or maybe I should go see a healer, like, because I talk about that openly. Like, on many days, I'm not okay. But I have found coping mechanisms that are not drugs and alcohol, and that are not sex and things like that, that are healthy coping mechanisms that I didn't have originally. But I have made it a point to try and figure out ways to healthy ways to cope with things that are happening to me in my life, like grief, like losing my father. There's a whole chapter in my book about death, and that was me trying to process that grief and put it somewhere, because oftentimes it can feel like too heavy a load to bear.
Yeah, and I think the other part of what our society does is it pushes us to be independent. So, but as human beings, we naturally, I think, we yearn for connection, or we yearn to be cared about. We yearn to be loved. But the way society is structured, oftentimes we're pushed away from one another. So it seems like poetry could be a vehicle for bringing us back together.
It absolutely is. It always has been, and I think that what people are looking for when they buy a book is they're looking for a mirror. We're searching for ourselves, especially as Latinos, and people of color in general are searching for themselves in books, in TV shows, in movies. We're searching for ourselves in media, and we're grasping at a few, you know, role models here and there, and that's not enough. And so I think it's important that we continue to be honest as writers, as creators, and we continue to give space and spotlight to people who are, you know, often marginalized, and we continue to lift their voices up with whatever platform that we have.
So one of the mechanisms of that, which I think is really beautiful, I think it's a great objective goal to aspire to, is through education. So I wanted you to talk for a little bit about you. You're a teacher, you're an educator. You've worked with young people. How does that look? Where are you doing that, and who are your students?
My students, I worked for a long time at La Pinaresca Teen Education Center. It's a teen education center here in Pasadena, and I was
It's right by the library.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right next to the library. And it is a place where I went to basically find myself, it felt like, as an educator, because I had started teaching in 2010 through an organization called Collective Voices, and I started it at Learning Works, which is a charter school. Yeah, I started it there, and we were able to do the pilot program there, and it was a pilot poetry program to see how poetry could be a vehicle for change in this community, because there at Learning Works, it's pregnant and parenting teens and credit deficient students. And so these kids are not exactly, you know, like on the greatest path at the moment, but I wanted to start the program there because I believe in art more than anything as a vehicle for change and for dreams, because when kids are shown that there's an opportunity to use their left brain, that, or is it right brain, left brain, the brain, the creative brain?
Yeah, it's, yeah.
The creative brain, you know what I mean.
It's the right brain, it affects the left side. So.
Well, I think that when they're able to use their creative brain and they see, well, wait a minute, that girl, she got big hoop earrings on, she got sneakers on, and she come in here and she does poems and she makes money for that and she doesn't have to go somewhere boring. I'm confused, you know, because it's like we're told that success looks one way, and what I want to do with my life, and that's my message, is I want to be able to show kids that are like me who really thought that a city job with a retirement plan was pretty much it. That I could make money using my heart and my soul and my creativity. And I didn't have to settle for the confines of what is acceptable and known. And so those students are people in the community that I have been able to teach from juvenile halls. I have performed in universities. I have done workshops in School on Wheels in Skid Row. I've been able to have the privilege of teaching at many different facilities. And I've had students all over.
Yeah, oftentimes kids, especially teens, are a little bit shy. And they're also a reflection of the society that they grew up in, which means oftentimes they're hindered as well, or they're more reticent to talk honestly about how they feel. How do you pull that out of them? How do you pull the truth out of them? How do you get them to feel comfortable enough with you and what you're doing to express themselves?
Well, if you want an honest response, you have to tell the truth yourself. So I'm not going in there telling them what they need to do. I model behavior. So I read poems from my book about the time I got a DUI and the time that just mistakes that I've made. And then when you hear somebody telling their truth, it's kind of hard and almost a form of disrespect not to participate in some way, shape, or form, even if it is just writing down the actual truth, because there's a difference. When people tell the truth, you can tell. You can always tell.
Right, you can connect, and teens are very, very savvy. They recognize it right away.
Yeah, because they're in the period of their life where that defense mechanism or survival tool, which is the ability to detect bullshit, if that's there or not, that's where they're learning it. And if you don't get it by then, I don't know if you'll get it, but that's where it's happening. And so it's that part of their brain that's barely developing, and so it's heightened at that moment. Mm-hmm. And because they're so super ego sensitive at the time, because it's all about the image at that time, and so they're concerned about what they say and how it'll affect how they look.
Oh, absolutely, because they want to fit in, they want to be accepted, they want to be cared about, they don't want to be pushed away by their peers.
Yeah.
The acceptance is really, really critical. But you mentioned that before, too, with adults. Adults feel the same way as well. They just don't exhibit it in the same...
Well, because we've learned to turn it off, because we're all operating from our inner child. That's always happening.
Yeah.
Our fear of rejection, it comes from our fear of abandonment, of being children and being like, oh, he doesn't want to play with me. Why doesn't he want to play with me? We're all our inner child. And it's like you're just a grown-up baby Barry, baby Brian, you know? And so I think we're just wearing different clothes and we got taller.
Yeah, I got a lot taller. So from what I'm hearing you say, poetry is kind of a combination of therapy and art.
Mm-hmm.
And for those kids, the process of just working with... kind of the vehicle of poetry is therapeutic.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of changes have you seen in them through your classes?
Well, I've had the honor and privilege to continue staying friends with, or family with, I would call it, with students who have aged out of my classes, who have gone on to college now. I have a student who is at Morehouse now, and he regularly still asks me for advice, and it means a lot to me, because I know that at that age I wasn't doing that, and so if I would have, I think that I would have made better choices. But I think what poetry taught him is that it's okay to feel, and so I'm still a comfortable, safe space for him, and I want to continue to be that, a person that's always going to be solid and always give the best advice I have at the moment, and always try to lead him in the right direction. And it's not just him, it's other kids that I have still have the privilege of you know, being friends with outside of mm-hmm. after they've graduated, because they trust me and they still invite me to, you know, their graduation. I just went to one of my students' college graduation, and I went to her high school graduation. And it was like, I still matter enough in her life, and that's how much poetry has mattered to her, is because I represent something for her. And I think I represent dreams, and I represent represent words and the power of words and the power of honesty and the power of putting all of that into something that is a living, breathing document, because that's what a poem is. It can always be edited and changed, but it's a living document.
Yeah, but I think you also represent, as you said before, truth. Because I think kids so often are maybe not deceived, but they're told a narrative that doesn't necessarily apply to them or doesn't necessarily allow them to grow and develop in ways that are healthy or that they would like. But you represent an alternative. You're the antithesis of what they've been fed either by society or the media is. So you're a breath of fresh air. So I could easily see how they would want to emulate you, but then also to learn more from you.
Thank you.
Speaking of this notion, I bet it really confuses them in a certain way. How can you make a living as an artist? How do you balance that? Because artists in our society, unless you make it really, really big, are not necessarily valued. And so how do you kind of find that space where you can be creative and then also earn a living?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's important to always produce content. It's important to always be to not just, so there's like the artist part of me, and then there's the PR part of me, because when you're an artist, you have to be everything.
Yeah.
So I'm my own publicist and my own everything.
Media manager.
Yeah, and so social media has been just so important in my development of gaining a following in terms of people who read my work and people who support me and repost my videos and people who will send me messages and tell me that, you know, something I said mattered to them. Mm-hmm. And so if it wasn't for social media, I don't know if I would have gotten those messages, or if I would have even been able to meet people where they're at, because people are on social media. And so as an artist right now, I would say that it's important to produce content, to write, to document all of the things that you're doing, all of your ideas. I have this this little girl named Elaine, and I worked with her at La Cañada, and she's my little girl genius, and I always remind her that she's a girl genius and that all of her ideas are brilliant, because she was just like me. She had a lot of ideas. She was very talkative, and they put her in a class where she needs help. Mm. And so that's how I met her, and I was looking around like, this kid's a genius. Like, this kid, she struggles with this subject, but in everything else, she's light years ahead of everyone. And so I think it's important to remind people that they are geniuses. And so if you are an artist, you are a genius. Mm-hmm. Those two things are synonymous. And so it's important that you don't try to water down your genius by being like, oh, well, that poem won't sell, or that poem won't get a lot of likes on Instagram, or just keep creating.
No one will like this poem.
Yeah, who cares? If they don't like it, you can't do everything so that people will like it. You have to do it because it's coming out of your soul.
Yeah, so you just do another one.
Mm-hmm.
And you just keep working on your craft.
Yeah.
So speaking of which, what would you like to do? What else would you like to do with poetry, with your creativity? What's next for you?
World domination. I'm just kidding.
Can that be done through poetry?
Absolutely. It's the only way it ever has been done, is through art.
Yeah.
And like, Toni Morrison just passed away, you know, and her words are, and what inspired me so much is that to know how much she had changed the world, she didn't even start writing until I read that she was in her 40s.
Yeah, and she started later.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a really focused period of time when she wrote
mm-hmm.
And created some amazing works.
Yeah. And it's really important to remember that she did she was one of the most revolutionary writers of color there are. Mm-hmm. And she's a woman, and she's a black woman, and she is just strong, and her voice was so impactful. And I want people to know that they can change the world with their words, but you can't do that unless you write them down. Mm-hmm. So they can't die with you. Mm-hmm. You got to put them in the world and let I think that fear is a big thing. I think fear has been a big thing in my life for a very long time.
So fear of failure? Or
fear of everything. Fear of failure.
Fear of being criticized.
All of those things. Yeah. All of the above. And I think that when you create these fears in your head, I think that when you come from poverty, dreams are for people who can afford them.
Right.
You know?
Or people have access, or people have power.
Mm-hmm. And so me and my mom were talking about on the way here that I was like, Mom, remember when I wanted to be an actress and you took me to John Robert Powers? And she's like, yeah. And those headshots, they wanted for too much money. We couldn't afford that. And it's like, what if we could have? What if we could have afforded them and we took those headshots? What would I have been able to accomplish if I had access to resources like that at the time?
You know, another way to think about that is, if you had done that, what would your life be like now? What door would you have gone through instead of what you're doing now?
Yeah.
So there's kind of the yin and yang about mm-hmm. that. Maybe you wouldn't be writing poetry the way you are now mm-hmm. if you had been able to afford the John Robert Powers photographs.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. All of these things are happening. It's all synchronicity, and it's all happening when it's supposed to. But I think mm-hmm. believing in yourself is something that I really want to, I want that to be part of my platform. I want to help people believe in themselves, because I want to draw the curtain back and be like, there's nothing back here but the same stuff you got. You got the same thing I got, and it's a pen and a paper, and you can make $1 million with that. And I need you to know that. So your question was, because I went all over the place, your question was, how do I make money? I get booked for college shows. I'm going to go do a school tour in High Plains, Colorado. The library hired me, and because it's important to talk about money, they're paying me $8,000 for a week, because I want a kid who might watch this to be like, oh, well, she's making money. How much? $8,000 for a week to go and go to different schools and do a tour and do some workshops and some performances of poems. And I'm really excited about it, because it will be the first time I ever do something like that. I've traveled the country for a while doing shows here and there, but for so long while I was working my two jobs, I was treating my dreams like a side hustle, and I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not allowing myself to keep myself small because I'm scared of what might happen if I fail. Because what's scarier is, what if I don't try?
Yeah, so I think the message for everyone who's watching would be to follow your dreams, be courageous, be bold.
And be yourself. Whoever that is, figure out who that is and do that. Because just do you, boo. Like, you just have to do you. Mm-hmm. Always.
Yeah. So one last thought is, because we're wrapping up, I'd love to talk to you longer, but maybe we'll have you on another time. What gives you hope?
The kids. The kids give me hope. Oh God, a little tear coming back. My student Kai, that I was mentioning, who he goes to Morehouse now. He started a shoe business, and like a sneaker business. And he just got an article in some newspaper and magazine. And it fills my heart up with so much joy to see people reaching for their dreams. Because too often we don't reach for them. And to see someone that I know has endless potential, because you can do both. You can be in school for psychology, which he is, and you can also reach for that entrepreneurial tip, because that's also an option. Mm-hmm. And we are brilliant. The hood is brilliant. Mm-hmm. And there's so much brilliance in poverty. And I want people to know that that cannot be a barrier. Do not let that stop you. You have survived this long, and you can find another way. So if they don't open the door, build a tunnel.
Exactly. And that's why I wanted you on the show, because your message is powerful and it's brilliant, as you just said, and it's hopeful. So thank you so much for being with us today. And also, best wishes to you, I mean, not only in Colorado, but with all of the performances and your future poetry. So thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Brian.
If you would like to support this podcast, you can rate it, review it, or subscribe. And to keep up with me daily, follow me on Instagram @MillennialMija. If you feel moved to pay it forward, you can always hit my Venmo @MillennialMija. And for bookings, visit me at, yes, you guessed it, MillennialMija.com.